DW Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We welcome those of you following us on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and on our radio partner stations.
Coming up on the program, Burundi rejects a call to withdraw its troops from Somalia that are part of AMISOM.
The decision taken by the African Union Peace and Security Commission didn't please the Burundian people.
South African government says it will bail out state utility Eskom with $4.9 billion over 3 years in a bid to avoid an economic meltdown.
There are 6 units that have gone down. That is most worrying, and it has shocked me.
That is South African President Cyril Ramaphosa. We have this and much more coming up shortly after this news brief.
DW News.
I'm Kai Dombach with the DW News. Russian President Vladimir Putin delivered his annual State of the Union address on Wednesday. He said Russia was developing a new kind of missile and a new submarine. This comes after the U.S. and Russia both withdrew from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. Putin said Russia would use its missiles if the U.S. deployed new missiles in Europe.
Russia will be forced to create and develop weapons which can be used not only towards those territories from which direct threats may be directed at us, but also towards those territories where centers of decision making is employing rocket systems that are threatening us.
The Russian leader also touched on domestic issues, proposing tax breaks for families with children and bringing a rail service to Crimea. Egypt executed 9 suspected members of the Muslim Brotherhood convicted for the 2015 assassination of the country's top prosecutor. The 9 were among 28 people sentenced to death for the assassination. Amnesty International called on Egypt to halt the executions, saying some defendants were forced into confession under torture. The Muslim Brotherhood has been banned and declared a terrorist group in Egypt. Venezuela's military said it was on high alert along the border and would prevent most foreign aid from coming into the country. The military suspended air and sea links with nearby Curaçao ahead of a planned aid shipment. However, aid was accepted from Russia, which supports President Nicolas Maduro. Opposition leader and self-declared interim president Juan Guaido vowed to bring aid into the conflict-ridden country this coming Saturday, in spite of military efforts to block it. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. Uganda's ruling party has endorsed longtime president Yoweri Museveni as its presidential nominee for the 2021 elections. Museveni, who is 73, will be running for his 6th term. This follows a court ruling to remove an age limit that would have prevented him from running. A German volunteer scientist working with a NASA-led project has found the oldest and coldest known white dwarf star. The star has been around for 3 billion years, judging by its temperature of just 5,800 degrees Celsius. Scientists think it could be the first known white dwarf with multiple dust rings, which could force astronomers to reconsider models of planetary systems. And in sports, Bayern Munich toughed out a gritty, goalless draw against Liverpool in Champions League play. Olympique Lyon and FC Barcelona also ended without a goal. Schalke 04 will face Manchester City tonight in Gelsenkirchen, and Atletico Madrid takes on Juventus to end the first leg of the Champions League round of 16. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
And you're still tuned to DW's Africa Link program live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. A warm welcome there. Also from our South African listeners, we have Chi Sylvester and Neba Pius, who says he is watching from South Africa. Let us know what you think about the stories we are covering today.
Now, the presidents of Burundi and Somalia have called for an urgent summit to discuss the contested withdrawal of 1,000 Burundian troops from Somalia before the end of the month.
The Africa Union is gradually scaling back its AMISOM force in troubled Somalia and announced late last year that the Burundian soldiers must leave by the end of February. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Nirora reports.
Burundi has strongly opposed the drawdown of its troops, a valuable source of foreign currency in the country, which has seen donor funding cut since a political crisis broke out in 2015. Since December 2007, Burundi has been receiving amounts of money deducted from the six rotating battalions comprising of about 5,500 troops deployed in the African mission in Somalia, AMISOM, that is fighting the Al-Shabaab militants. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza said the decision was not welcome after meeting his Somali counterpart Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed.
The decision taken by the African Union Peace and Security Commission didn't please the Burundian people. We call for an urgent summit of troop-contributing countries in Somalia so that the decision can be reconsidered for the benefit of all.
On his part, Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed commended efforts by Burundian peacekeepers that are helping in stabilizing his country.
I salute and admire the bravery of the Burundi National Defense Force, and I thank the government and the people of this great nation for your pan-Africanism to help your fellow African brothers and sisters in Somalia. Since 2007, Burundi soldiers in Somalia have made the ultimate sacrifice and assure the people of Burundi, your soldiers' sacrifices will not go in vain.
The Somali president further indicated that country contributors of AMISOM troops will be part of the Somali history and also regretted that the AU Peace and Security Commission would seek their withdrawal.
Burundi and other African troop contributing countries in Somalia will be part of our national history and the history that we all African be proud of, and the history that we can find our African solution to African problems. We need to understand that our future is interdependent and our cooperation will not only be limited in the field of security, but we need to explore economic cooperation between our two nations.
The drawdown to start with 1,000 Burundian troops was decided by the United Nations and the African Union as part of the reduction in AU troops in Somalia amid transition of security responsibility to Somali National Security Forces.
Apolline Yura reporting from Bujumbura, and some of your comments right now. Bahatima Bandla Sala says, the presence of foreign troops counts for nothing. Al-Shabaab still carries out attacks in Mogadishu. AMISOM has failed.
Manomtona Bala says it is very likely that countries contributing troops to the so-called peacekeep missions could even be jeopardizing peace efforts in order to continue their business of peacekeeping.
Now, German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer says foreign fighters for the Islamic State terrorist group and their families will only be allowed to repatriate to Germany if their identities are proven beyond doubt and they constitute no security risk.
Seehofer said that each case must be clarified on the ground in Syria before anyone is placed on a plane, including personal data and criminal charges in other countries. Ina Kemules has more.
In an interview with the daily newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung, Germany's Interior Minister Horst Seehofer said that, quote, in the interest of the security of our country, the German government must set out conditions for the return of former IS fighters who have German citizenship. Seehofer wants to prevent former Islamic State fighters from returning to Germany if they are suspected of carrying out serious offences. Some 40 foreign fighters who fought for Islamic State are in detention in Syria reportedly have German passports. Germany's conservative interior minister has said they can only return under strict conditions. On her part, Germany's Justice Minister Katharina Barley said that Germany is ready to prosecute war criminals and that there should be no doubt that anybody will escape justice for crimes committed.
Germany is one of the few countries that can prosecute and pass sentence for war crimes, irrespective of the perpetrator's nationality and where the crimes were committed. For these crimes to be dealt with, it is not necessary for the accused to be brought to Germany or that they are German citizens. The German justice system can deal with such crimes comprehensively and pass judgment, as it already has done in the case of Syria and the genocide in Rwanda.
Den Völkermord in Rwanda betrifft.
In the meantime, the UK will strip citizenship from a teenager who joined the Islamic State group in Syria, but now wants to return home with her newborn baby. Shamima Begum's fate has stirred controversy since she and two friends left London to join the terror network 4 years ago when she was aged just 15. In France, authorities said it would take back militants on a case-by-case basis, but would not comply with US President Donald Trump's call over the weekend for European fighters to be repatriated immediately. EU leaders have pushed back against the demand. Detaining and prosecuting alleged Islamic State members and fighters would be difficult without witnesses, along with evidence of crimes committed while engaged with the terrorist group.
Ineka Mulls with that report. And on our Facebook page, Akin Shitu says he's listening from Nigeria. Tando Tan says from Dubai, I follow you. Many thanks. You can always share this audio with your friends. Now, darkness is looming over South Africa's economy. This follows a string of load shedding as the country's state-owned energy provider Eskom was nearing collapse.
Eskom, which produces 95% of South Africa's electricity, has had to take off up to 4,000 megawatts from the grid, causing up to 4 hours of electricity outages per day countrywide. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Eskom spokesperson Kulupasiwe admits that the power utility's failure to properly service its power generating plants is behind its woes.
Over a period of nearly, say, 6 years or so of backlogs that we needed to have tackled, and this management and the board came when these things were there. But plans are underway to make sure that the maintenance happens.
The outages have openly angered President Cyril Ramaphosa.
There are 6 units that have gone down. That is most worrying, and it just shocked me and has also made me quite angry that we've reached this stage of dysfunctionality.
Some politicians have accused President Cyril Ramaphosa and Energy Minister Jeff Hatebe of being behind the Eskom blackout so that when it's privatized, it is taken over by their in-law, Patrice Motsepe, one of the country's few billionaires. Motsepe has rubbished the claim, saying he does not support the privatization of Eskom and has no intention of investing his money there.
We understand we are living in a time when it's elections and lots of issues are going to be said, but we are a democracy. And even if I didn't have these relatives in government, I have a duty and an obligation to be ethical and accountable.
That report was filed by Tuzo Kumalo from Johannesburg.
And of course, we have many reactions on that, Isaac. Chama Chisimba said they should be privatized and governments should only be minority shareholders. The issue of mismanaging power utility company is ubiquitous in Africa.
And he goes on to say this has affected the funding of capital projects meant to improve power generation, transmission and distribution.
And of course, we have Joseph Ekobo who says that is Africa for you.
Didier Farage says South Africa has qualified people to run this energy utility. It's called privatization and it works. Privatize the institution, not just in South Africa, but all over Africa. Well, before we came on air, while reading the budget, South African government said it will bail out state utility Eskom with $4.9 billion over 3 years in a bid to avoid an economic meltdown. We'll be back right after this.
Make your voice count. Join DW Africa on Facebook and comment on the stories there. You could get a mention on Africa Link, which broadcasts live on Facebook. That's DW Africa.
Now, back to that story of South African government bailing out state utility Eskom with $4.9 billion over 3 years. Now, Zippy, load shedding is quite common in countries that are struggling with water levels, especially during droughts.
Yeah, of course, that happens. And I think it is the best way. Somehow, there has to be a solution.
And for 4 hours, I don't think that's too much. But for the industries, we know South Africa has so many industries. It is one of Africa's largest economies. And surely it was timely that they bail out, you know, this Eskom company before it is privatized.
Yeah, I know also in Nairobi, we have cases where the government does the same, especially in Nairobi.
Yeah, in Uganda also is struggling with power issues, especially that, you know, they have to load shed at least for quite 8 hours a day. And so is Nigeria also, where we had a story from Lagos where generators take over during the day. Anyway, tell us what the situation is in your country about electricity. Do you experience load shedding? By going to our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. A big thank you to all those listening to us on our Facebook page there, as well as those following us on our partner radio stations across Africa.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will hear how education in Cameroon's Anglophone region has been disrupted by the ongoing crisis.
We can't go to school. Even we succeed in going to school, they will be shooting to that, and we are forgetting everything that we have learned.
Oh, what a pity indeed, that child, you know, talking about bullets instead of going to school, they can't go. You can feel the pain in his voice. You know, he says, Tata, that's the sound of bullets, I mean, I think.
For sure. Yeah, for sure, that's coming. But first, we also go there in Cameroon, because as we just had, the Anglophone crisis has been spiraling out of control. Human rights activists have been warning about the plight of children who are suffering from, among others, malnutrition, abuse, and are often denied their basic rights.
Now, Human Rights Watch researcher Jonathan Pernot says both separatists and the government have neglected children, and they are now being used as a bargaining chip in the crisis. Our colleague Christina Kripal talked to him. Now, take a listen.
We have a situation now in the Anglophone regions whereby groups that pretend or say that they are fighting for the rights of the Anglophone minority in Cameroon are indeed attacking their own, attacking children, preventing them from going to school. And this is nothing new. We've been documenting this since late 2016 or early 2017. There have been a number of attacks on schools and on dormitories with the objective of preventing children and teachers from providing education to the children in the area. And they're using children as a bargaining chip, which is not only immoral, but also illegal. The fact that they would go as far as to kidnap these children is alone grave enough to really worry the international community with regards to the direction that these groups have taken now.
That's a key word. The international community doesn't seem all too interested in what's happening there. Why is that?
One reason for that is the fact that Cameroon has long been seen as a very stable partner for a number of states in Europe and North America, especially in the context of the counter Boko Haram operations in the Lake Chad area. It's also a very solid partner for the UN, who's been relying on Cameroon to provide logistical support to their mission in the Central African Republic, for instance. So there's a lot of people who are not too keen on angering the government of Cameroon, and that has translated in a lack of international criticism. The problem with that, obviously, is that it sends all the wrong signals to decision makers, both in Yaoundé and within the Anglophone group, who think that they can get away scot-free without clear condemnation from the international community, despite the fact that they are committing such clear abuses.
The Cameroonian government should, of course, protect its own children, no matter where they are, but it doesn't seem too keen in intervening. Do you feel it has an interest in perhaps stoking a division among the separatists?
The response of the government has been one of abuse from day one. They have responded to peaceful demonstrations by targeting leaders of the Anglophone community, detaining them for long periods of time. They have responded to mass demonstrations by using live ammunition against demonstrators. And the government of Cameroon does not want to engage in any form of dialogue with these groups. The government is, by and large, just as guilty for the current state of play in the Anglophone regions of Cameroon right now.
What's in store for the future? What needs to be done?
Well, I think it's key for a number of states now to take leadership on this issue. And Germany should definitely be part of those states that push for human rights and respect for the rule of law in Cameroon. Obviously, Germany has a history in Cameroon, and I think it is a voice that would be welcomed by a number of actors on the ground. The other important thing is that a lot of these groups now that operate in the Anglophone regions of Cameroon are supported by large Anglophone diaspora. It is very, very important that these people take the time to consider ways in which the various groups that they may be supporting also affect the rights of people on the ground.
Human Rights Watch researcher Jonathan Pernot.
On the spot.
As we just heard from that interview, children have had to bear the brunt of what is happening in the Anglophone regions. Schools have been forced to close or been disrupted when violence flares up. UNICEF says over 300,000 children have problems accessing education. On the spot is our correspondent Jean-Marie Ngong-Song with more from Bamenda.
There is little activity here at the Bamenda Progressive High School. The separatists declared today a ghost town in honor of their Ambazonian leader, Julius Ayuk Sisiku, and 100 others who are appearing in court facing charges of rebellion and insurrection. For nearly 2 years now, schools remain closed each Monday when the ghost town strike takes place. Ghost town operations have become a tradition since the crisis broke out in 2016 with activists calling on residents to stay indoors. The students tell me the crisis has forced them to miss many classes.
We can't go to school. Even if we succeed in going to school, they will be shooting to that we are forgetting everything that we have learned.
In Kumu, it's really serious there. There are burning of houses there. There are kidnapping students there. There are attacks. Schools are not going there, and there are no even signs that school even go there in the next 2 years.
The crisis has made me not to go to school every day because of the several ghost towns and lockdowns. When we go to school, teachers give a lot of assignments. That makes me to study alone.
Bishop George Nku of the Roman Catholic Church, Diocese of Kumbu, has been in the front line in calling for peace. Bishop George Nku says it is an unfair that children's future has been put at stake due to the crisis.
A good number of places now, for 3 academic years, children have not had a chance to go to school, sacrificing the future of children's education.
Despite the crisis, the children still have big dreams for their future.
The crisis has affected me in so many ways. And one of the ways, I'll not be able to go to school due to so many lockdowns and ghost towns. And my fear is that teachers may not be able to finish their syllabus, and my education will be half-baked.
I'm going to school, and then even the teachers, they are there. Some of them don't even want to come and teach us. So this crisis has really affected me. I dream to be a teacher in future. So this crisis, I don't really know whether I will fulfill my dreams because of this crisis.
Cameroon's English-speaking minority have long accused the government in the mostly French-speaking part of the country of ignoring them. Separatists have been demanding independence for the Northwest and the Southwest regions, the country's two Anglophone areas.
Jean-Marie Ngong-Song with that report from Bamenda. And you have been telling us what you think about these stories. Romeo Adel says it is so sad children are being used as pawns, all in the name of some greedy, selfish people.
Foba Cyprian says there is no doubt that just like the war declared by the LRSC president, the staged kidnapping of students is playing a very critical role in distracting attention from the root causes of the crisis.
Difo Richard says the use of children as pawns in the current conflict is the most insane thing to do. And he goes on to say attacks on schools and school authorities is also the norm.
Priscilla Akongo says, why do people torment other people's kids? What are they thinking about? This saying that goes, what goes around comes around, is not to be taken for granted.
And Lloyd K is asking us a question, who is really the one behind the children's kidnappings and why?
Tell us more about this story, what you think, by going on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Living Planet Africa.
We now head to Turkana in northeastern Kenya, a region known for its hot and dry weather, dubbed one of the harshest in the region. There are approximately 1 million people, a quarter of them refugees from different countries like DRC, Burundi, and Somalia.
Well, some of the refugees have taken up farming and tackling environmental challenges to the place they now call their second home. Our correspondent Andrew Asike was there and filed this report.
The sun is scorching hot and the temperatures here at Kakuma refugee camp have hit a high of 40 degrees centigrade. The land is flat and barren, save for a few brittle shrubs breaking up the loud emptiness of the desert. The local Turkana community are nomadic pastoralists who mainly rely on food aid rations, just like the refugees at the camp. They have watched helplessly as their animals die due to lack of pasture. But behind all this is a changing story. Thanks to the refugees at the camp, they have been reclaiming the dry land for farming and growing trees. Msajimana Posuberi from the Democratic Republic of Congo is one of them. Msajimana follows bees and birds to locate dry riverbeds. Using irrigation, he extracts this water for farming. He then has to water the plants before sunrise and sunset to avoid evaporation.
Unaona hii climate ni vigumu. Jua
You see, the climate here is very harsh because it's too hot and there is no water. We have to use our bare hands to dig wells and draw water from the ground. This is really hard. Back home in the Democratic Republic of Congo, farming is easy because our seasons are better than in the desert. Here in Turkana, the climate is very harsh. It's quite different from our place.
The extreme weather has heightened poverty levels and led to resource conflict between locals and the refugees. A study by the University of Nairobi shows that extreme drought events have increased in northern Kenya over the last 63 years. The effects are dire for both parties. Kizimana Felicity is a Burundian refugee. She says it's even harder for women whose workload is doubled due to lack of basic amenities like food and water.
When I left Burundi, they had just killed my husband. I took my children and we ran away from the war. When I arrived at this camp, we faced many problems. The food was really scarce, and being a farmer, I started searching for a place to farm.
Edith Imbolokonye Ngutia is with the United Nations High Commission for Refugees as the livelihoods officer at the Kakuma refugee camp. Ngutia believes refugees are a blessing to the environment in Turkana.
We've been able to see that we can actually reclaim the land. The host community can actually have food for their animals, food for their own home consumption, and also food for sale. So it has really contributed to the climate change of this place and also the fact that agriculture can be done here. We've seen that there is a new change in the host community embracing vegetable consumption.
Whether the community will successfully adapt to the current climate change will depend on how the environmental challenges are tackled and whether mobility is secured. For Kizimana Felicity, her farm is everything despite the challenges.
Whenever we have no food, I come to this farm and pluck these vegetables like mrere or rengarenga for my kids to eat. I have lived here for 9 years with my children and have no other source of livelihood apart from these crops.
That was Felicita, one of the refugees there at Kakuma. That report was compiled by Andrew Wasike.
Get personal with DW Africa on WhatsApp and don't miss out on any news and videos from us. Go to dw.com/Africa and find out how to join our WhatsApp service.
Now, just last week, we reported about the 150 people in Cameroon who were charged with hostility to the homeland and insurrection for their role in anti-government protests in Cameroon. And the president of the Movement for the Rebirth of Cameroon Opposition Party, Maurice Kamto, was among those charged. Today, a ruling is expected later in the evening. And some of you have been commenting on this story, especially our followers from Bamenda in Cameroon. Zippy, some comments, please.
Yeah, you're right, Isaac. Many people are skeptical. Nge Edison says nothing good can come out of that ruling. The delay game will continue as usual.
D.A. Stelle says the government is confused on how to solve the present Anglophone crisis. The only way out is to free all arrested and open dialogue with the concerned parties. Guns don't negotiate with guns. Only dialogue can do.
Wow, that's a good one.
Yes, strong comment there.
Alois Degam says, for more than 1 year now, the court has been unable to take its stand. We are not expecting anything different from what has been going on. Another adjournment.
Well, we at Africa Link, we decided to follow this story in Cameroon. What's happening there? We have our correspondents everywhere, in Bamenda, in Yaoundé, and we'll always bring you this story. Now, Bob Barunan says leaders who don't listen will eventually be surrounded by people who have nothing to say.
Wow.
Strong comment there.
For sure. And Koji Loretta says it's a political trial, so expect most legal principles to be violated by those claiming to dispense justice. Very skeptical.
Uche Oji says, despotic regimes are known to exist on the basis of desperation. I don't expect anything good from the court judgment. Continue this dialogue on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And there we come to the end of the show. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW.
for Minds.